I want to welcome everybody and introduce the speaker sessions that we're doing. And this is a collaboration between Colorado, Arizona, and also Ohio, and from our public relations, H&I. And we're bringing a message of Narcotics Anonymous throughout the country for the addicts who are suffering and the addicts behind the walls, the addicts in rural areas. And what I'd like to start with today is have Jimmy H., if he'd be so kind, read who is an addict.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jimmy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jimmy.
Who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you, Jimmy. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We're recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership: the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our own daily lives. The most important thing about them is they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organization. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surrender at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. If I could have Paul read.
Hey, everyone. My name is Paul. I'm an addict. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative: either go on as the best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you, Paul. So my name is Chris. I'm an addict. I want to welcome the Addicts Behind the Wall with Ohio State Penitentiary. I just noticed you guys are online. And I want to say, you know, Narcotics Anonymous will never look away. You are not forgotten. You are such an important component of who we are as a fellowship. And your voice is so important. And the fact that you're walking clean and reaching for this way of life behind the walls touches my heart. I've been where you're at. And I have nothing but love and respect for you. And I'm so grateful you're here today. We're going to have a gentleman speak today named Ryan M. I met Ryan originally at in Colorado, I believe. I spoke with one of his counterparts about the laptop program that they are doing. I know Paul is doing that as well. And so Ryan's going to share his experience, strength, and hope with us today for about a half an hour. And then what we'd like to do is we're going to open it up to our brothers at the Ohio State Penitentiary. And I want you to be involved in the meeting if you have any questions. And Paul's going to kind of take over after Ryan and get this thing rolling. So with no further ado, a man I've gotten to know and I really respect. I'm really grateful that he's sharing with us today. Ryan, if you could go ahead and share your experience, something help. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. My name is Ryan. I'm an addict. And I'm extremely grateful and happy to be here today, have a chance to share with you my journey, my experience with Narcotics Anonymous, and how I got here and what that was like in the process for me. So, you know, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous at a real young age. I was born to a family a broken home. My parents were separated when I was born. They're both addicts, and you know, I grew up in a home where I was isolated. I was neglected. Memories of being locked in the closet, locked in a bedroom while my family is out there getting high and using. And as a kid, I internalized that like something was wrong with me. You know, why don't my parents want me to be around? You know, why am I in here by myself? And I didn't know at a young age what drugs were, what partying was. I didn't have an understanding of what that was. But you know, I was introduced to a lot of insanity and violence at a young age, people getting stabbed at my house, and you know, just parties all the time and things like that. And as a child, you know, I didn't feel safe. I think that, you know, I didn't have that basic you know, security that a child seeks, you know, from his parents. And I never really formed a good relationship with my mom and my dad. And you know, I remember just wanting to feel accepted and wanting to fit in, wanting someone to like me or wanting to hang out with me, you know. And you know, as I got older, you know, my mom would drop me off at my grandparents' house, and she would go to work midnight to morning, like third shift, you know. And I would spend a lot of time with my grandparents, and when I was there, I got a lot of the love and the stability, the structure that I needed as a kid. And I just wanted to stay with them. I just wanted to be with my grandparents where I felt good, you know, and safe. And I loved my grandparents. They really, you know, they weren't my parents, but they felt like my parents, you know. So it was in 1989 that my mom got arrested. Well, I was 7 years old then, you know, and she got arrested, and the courts had her start going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And so I would hear, you know, at a young age, I got introduced to NA, not knowing that one day the impact it would have in my life. You know what I mean? And maybe my higher power was using my mom to, you know, help me one day, you know. And as a kid, I would go to meetings with her, and I'd hear the readings that we just went over, you know. Who is an addict? Why are we here? What is the NA program? How it works? We do recover. I'd hear those readings, and I didn't know it, but I was paying attention subconsciously, I guess, you know, I was paying attention. And eventually those readings would play a big role in me getting clean. Fast forward a little bit, I got sent to live with my grandparents when my mom got clean eventually. You know, I was a spoiled kid, you know. And then after my mom had a few years clean, she wanted me to move back with her, and I was terrified. I felt like I was being ripped away from my parents, actually, you know. And so I moved back to Phoenix with my mom, and I was in about fifth, sixth grade at that time, you know. You know, just that awkwardness of being a kid. I didn't have any brothers or sisters. I'd go to school and wanted to fit in. And it was in seventh grade that I joined a gang, you know, and that's when things kind of started changing for me. It's when, you know, the using, the introduction to drugs started happening. I remember my first experience with getting high was like my friends would be at my house before school. And we'd have like washcloths, and we'd put them over Glade aerosol cans, and we would huff the aerosol, or we would like huff paint out of cans, and we would try to get our hands on alcohol, or, you know, pay homeless people to get us alcohol and cigarettes and stuff like that, you know. I don't think I really wanted to do that kind of stuff. That wasn't like, oh, I need to get high. You know what I mean? What, you know, it kind of probably sat and didn't sit right with my conscience, but the desire to fit in and be accepted outweighed everything. You know, I didn't want my friends to think I was weird. I didn't want them to not like me. So I would do things that went against how I really felt just in order to fit in, you know. And with that came violence, stealing, committing crimes and things like that. You know, eventually, you know, around eighth grade, going into ninth grade, I got into some serious trouble with gangs. And my mom really found out the severity of it, and she sent me back to my grandparents' house in Lake Havasu. And I didn't fit in anymore. You know, I was coming from an environment of Hispanics, and and street gangs, and I'm going to a town where there's a bunch of retirees, and you know, it was just it was a different experience for me. But the common denominator that kept me plugged in and feeling accepted was the drugs. You know, I transitioned into high school. I was able to get high. I was able to, you know, fit in by how much drugs and everything that I had, you know. But now I have my grandparents that are supporting my habit and spoiling me. And the truth is, they shouldn't have been taking care of me. They were too old, you know. But my disease grew, you know. The progression of the disease, you know, from huffing to smoking marijuana to, you know, whatever the substance was, crack cocaine, methamphetamines. It just continued to get worse and worse and worse, you know. And unfortunately, you know, in that using time of my high school adolescent years, I really put my grandparents through a lot of pain in their retirement years. You know, the lying, the stealing, the insanity, and taking from them, because my addiction reached a point at a young age where it was the driving factor and everything. I mean, I dropped out of school in 10th grade so I could get high. I thought, like, I had this vision that I was going to somehow be a successful drug dealer. I didn't need to go to school, and I didn't care who I hurt in the process. And I'm the type of addict that when I use, it's the people that I love the most are the ones that get hurt the most. And you know, so that was, like, you know, my adolescent years, you know. And then, you know, before I turned 18, I started getting in trouble with the law. I went to a rehab when I was 17, you know, and then in the early 2000s, I was an adult and I caught my first felony. And in 2004, I went to prison for the first time, and I was scared. You know what I mean? I was 22 years old at that time. And you know, the little history about me is that, like, in Arizona, I don't know how it is in Ohio or the other states, but in Arizona, there's a lot of segregation in prison due to race, you know, whites, blacks, Mexicans, however. And you know, I'm Hispanic, you know, but my dad's white, and I grew up in a home where I didn't speak Spanish, but I always kicked it with the Mexicans, and I didn't really fit in, you know what I mean? And so I was back to feeling awkward again, you know, that disconnect, you know. But I remember having a choice when I went to prison: who are you going to kick it with, you know? And it was the Mexicans, you know. And you know, I picked up a lot of behaviors and beliefs and attitudes in prison, that weren't healthy, you know. Prejudice, racism, pride, violence, a lot of prison rules and stuff like that, that I thought that were like the rules that you live by. You know, and they ended up hurting me overall rather than helping me, you know. And that wasn't my first time going to prison. You know, I went to prison in 04. I got out. I'd get in relationships with women. You know, and I had a felony at such a young age that I couldn't get an apartment. I couldn't get a place of my own. I couldn't get a good job. So I was the type of guy that would, like, shack up with these women, and they would have their own apartment, and they would have kids with food stamps. And that was my ways and means to survive. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't self-supporting through my own contributions, and I just couldn't seem to support myself. And along with that came a lot of negative self-image. You know, of course I put on this mask that I was this cool guy, but inside, there was, like, this insecurity, you know, that I'm not good enough. You know, I can't provide for myself. I have to rely on my family or some women to take care of me. And I was in these relationships, and I was physically, verbally, and mentally abusive. You know, every relationship that I was in until I got into recovery, was there was abuse involved. And that abuse was me calling them names. That was me putting my hands on them, in attempt to manipulate and control to get what I wanted. And every time I did that, I hated myself. You know what I mean? It just made me feel so small inside. And you know, I didn't want to do that, but it was almost like part of my disease, because I couldn't stop myself, you know. And as long as I had those drugs in my body, like, there was no, like, restraint. You know what I mean? I was able to do things while I was using that I'm just not capable of doing while I'm high. And it was just the ignoring my conscience, you know, and the ability to do things that just wasn't good. But the end of my road, I found myself, 31 years old, living in Phoenix. I was on the streets. And there's this street in Phoenix. It's 27th Avenue. It's pretty much rock bottom. You know what I mean? It's a bad spot of town. It's where the prostitutes are. It's where the drugs are. And I was finding myself homeless, living on 27th Avenue. And I was stealing from the gas station to eat. You know, I was with this woman who was sleeping around in a stripper. And I was like, I was just trying to get enough money together so I could get on a bus and catch her cheating on me. You know what I mean? But every time that I would get enough money together to get on a bus, it would go right into the pipe. You know what I mean? And I was stuck. I was sleeping in stairwells, and it was rock bottom. I was 31 years old. And I remember telling myself that I would quit getting high when she came back to me or when I went to prison. And sure enough, I went to prison before she came back to me, and I got caught doing a burglary and red-handed in the house, you know what I mean? And I knew that my best chances of getting the least amount of time was to me to sign a plea bargain and to hopefully they wouldn't allege my priors, you know? And this is where Narcotics Anonymous came into my life, because, the first time in my life, like, I was scared going to prison. I wasn't scared of going to prison. It was scared of that. What am I going to do with myself? Because my best efforts keep landing me right here over and over again. Like, I don't know any other way to live. And this is where I keep finding myself. And if I don't do something different, I'm going to spend the rest of my life in prison. And I had the feeling of hopelessness. There was that, what am I going to do? You know? And so I was in county jail and I was writing a letter to the judge. I was trying to get a mitigated sentence. And because the light bulb went off in my mind for the first time, is like, I have a drug problem. I don't know why it took me 15 years to realize that I have a drug problem, but it was finally like evident to me that every time I get high, this is what happens, you know? And so I'm sitting there writing a letter to the judge, and the words that I'm putting on the paper came straight from our reading. Why are we here? You know what I mean? It was through my inability to accept personal responsibilities that I've been creating my own problems. And that's when the literature of Narcotics Anonymous came alive to me, and it made sense to me. And I'm so grateful that I got to go to those meetings with my mom as a kid, because when I needed it, it showed up for me. Narcotics Anonymous has never let me down, you know, but I had to be brought to a point of surrender, you know, and that's where I was. I didn't want to spend the rest of my life in prison, and I loved getting high, but what I loved more than anything is my freedom. And at that point, you know, it was like, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to stay out of prison. And if that means I have to quit getting high, then that's what I have to do, you know? And so I ended up getting sentenced to 3 1/4 years on a burglary. And I got sent to Tucson, Arizona, and I started going to meetings in Tucson. And my first night there, I had a spiritual awakening, because this is my third time going to prison. I hit the yard. The homies are giving me cigarettes. They move me into a dorm, and I get a cubicle all by myself. I don't even have to share a bunk with anybody. And everything's going good. You know, I have a pillow, a blanket, and I wake up the next morning. They're calling chow. And I reach over, I got cigarettes, I'm getting out of bed, I got a warm blanket, and I realized that my life in prison was better than it was than on the streets. And that was a hard pill for me to swallow, because on the streets, I was sleeping in stairwells, I was sniping cigarettes off the ground, I was stealing from QT to eat. And I just had that spiritual awakening, that aha moment that it was very eye-opening for me to acknowledge that my life in prison was better than it was on the streets. And so I started going to meetings. They had meetings at the yard I was at. Not all of them were Narcotics Anonymous. And at that time, I went to whatever meetings I could get to. But I did make a choice to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And when I was there, I was sitting at this meeting that was ran by other inmates. We're sitting in the day room or wherever, we're having a meeting. And there's this guy sitting across the room from me, and he's chairing the meeting, right? And I have an old prison number at this time. It's like a 1845 number. We're in 2013, and I first went in 2004. And the guy sitting across the room from me is chairing this meeting, and he's got like a 1 10 or real old prison number, you know, and he's got this political ink on him, swastikas, lightning bolts or whatever, and not even the same race that I'm running with. But he's sitting there chairing the meeting, talking about how he's got hope and how Narcotics Anonymous taught him all these spiritual principles and how when he gets out, his life is going to change. And he's not. And what he gave me at that moment was hope, because I could relate to him. He had done more crime than me, more time than me, and probably more drugs than me. And he had it worse than me. And he believed this program was going to change his life. And I believed at that moment that this was my solution, you know. And so we started working some steps, and you know, I would sit at my cubicle during count time. I would work my steps, and you know, and I ended up going over a four step with him, and we shared stuff with each other that I probably would have never shared with anybody else. And this was on a prison yard, you know, and it changed my life. You know, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. And I'm just grateful for that man. And the cool thing today is he ended up relapsing and going back to prison, and now he's out, and now I sponsor him. You know what I mean? It's like, it's come like full circle, you know. And actually later on today, I'm meeting up with him, and we're going to go over his first step. And the program in Narcotics Anonymous is a beautiful thing. You know, we have a good close relationship, and I could probably share with this guy stuff like, you know, that I wouldn't share with anybody else. There's that trust, you know. And, you know, I did get involved with sponsorship behind the walls before I got out of prison. That was like, you know, because this guy ended up getting moved to a different yard, and I needed to stay plugged in working steps. And while I was in prison, I may not have had access to all the meetings and everything that the program offers us while like on the outside. But one thing that I had in prison was time on my hands, and I could sit there and work steps. And that's where the real magic of the program happened, is through working the steps. I mean, there's the fellowship, there's going to meetings, there's going to coffee after the meetings, but the real internal change is a result of working the steps, putting pen to paper and doing that dive inside to find out what makes you tick, and revealing the patterns of behavior and why that stuff happens. And I remember my sponsor asking me three things that I wanted to get out of recovery. And at that time, I just wanted to be able to stay out of prison. I wanted to be able to have a healthy relationship, and I wanted to be able to keep a roof over my head and provide for myself. And if I knew that one day I would have all that and so much more, you know, I really sold myself short about my vision about what recovery could offer me. So I ended up getting released at the end of 2015. I paroled to a halfway house, and I took the suggestions that were given to me. I went to a meeting every day for 90 days. I continue to work steps. You know, I got a home group. I started to be of service. I five things: meetings, step work, sponsorship, home group, being of service. Those things will really help. You know, if you're doing those five things, you're giving yourself the best chance of success to stay out of prison and to, you know, not use drugs. So, you know, my journey has been one of service. I've always stayed plugged in with service, doing H&I. You know, I've had my rights restored. Well, my civil rights restored, some of my felonies set aside. Today, I take meetings into the prisons here in Arizona, and I give back to the fellowship that gave me life, you know, and that's the purpose. That, you know, I would say my purpose in life is aligned with our fifth tradition, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. You know, that's where I find freedom for myself, and that's where I can finally, I feel like all the negative and bad things that I've done in my life, I can finally like take that and use it for something good. You know what I mean? It means that all that negative and bad stuff, the people that I hurt and everything, it wasn't for nothing. You know what I mean? I can use that as part of my story to share with you guys and to maybe give you hope if you're feeling hopelessness, that there is something better, you know, because there really is. Like, and we may be able to reach people that, you know, other people may not be able to reach just by being able to share. Look, my name's Ryan. My prison number is 184509. And this is what my journey was like. You know, someone might hear that and be like, oh, well, if he can do it, so can I. So, you know, there's so much more in my story, but I just want you to know that if you're sitting in jail, you're sitting in prison right now, take advantage of what's there for you. There's literature on the tablets. You know what I mean? There's programs like Sponsorship Behind the Walls where you can work steps with a sponsor. You know, you can work with other addicts inside right now and just help them and be their support. You know what I mean? You're not alone. So I think that pretty much sums up what I have to share with you guys today. I hope I've touched somebody, made an impact. And my name's Ryan. My clean date's May 21st of 2013 from Phoenix. Thank you for letting me share.
My name is Chris. I'm an addict. What a beautiful, powerful message. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it, Ryan. I'm really grateful you were able to share your experience, strength, and hope with us. Paul, why don't you go ahead and kind of take us to our next stage?
Sure. Hey, everyone. My name's Paul. I'm an addict. And Ryan, I'm just so excited to hear your share today. Thanks so much for sharing the hope. For our brothers at OSP, we're just going to wrap up a little bit with a bit of a closing, and then we can turn the recording off if that would help, so that y'all can turn your camera on. And if you have any questions or comments, the recording will be turned off, so you don't have to worry about being recorded. But you know, as Ryan mentioned, and as many of you probably already know, there are a lot of materials available on the tablets there at OSP. They include informational pamphlets like Am I an Addict and Another Look, and booklets like Behind the Walls and the magazine Reaching Out, which is chock full of experience, you know, from people who have been incarcerated and are working the program. There's even an audio book of the basic text, and all of these resources are available in English as well as Spanish. And then there are a number of speaker recordings that are in English. And to find that content, check your tablet for apps called Edovo or CipherWorks. And while NA is not affiliated with these apps, they do help us to carry the message. And starting early this year, 2025, you should be able to simply search Narcotics Anonymous within these apps to access all these materials. And as Ryan alluded to, you know, use these NA resources every day and don't keep them to yourself. Tell your friends about them. Share this life-saving, life-changing message of Narcotics Anonymous recovery and support each other in your journeys. Read the materials together. Help each other if needed. Listen to the speaker recordings as a group when you can. And remember that NA also stands for Never Alone, Never Again. This is a we program, and together we can do what would be impossible alone. Really grateful to be here today. I'm Paul. I'm an addict.